One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week here in the studio is Matt Kim.
Hello.
Sam Claiborne joins us.
Hey, everybody. Good to see you. I have one down back here, so one soldier's down.
Which soldier is that?
I got a new one back there. I came home from the arcade. It's Whirlwind.
Whirlwind, okay.
Williams Whirlwind.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Good game.
Very cool. And that voice you just heard was Justin Davis.
Scoop.
We got a great show for you this week. Got some very interesting topics submitted from our listeners in Scoop Nation. One on very relevant to the DLC that's been coming out for Resident Evil 4 and Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty. You know, what does a good DLC need to do to bring you back to a game that you haven't played in a long time? And then our sort of big topic this week is a question about AI. Would you play a completely AI-generated video game? Something that human beings have not touched barely at all. That'll be a good discussion to come up in just a bit. But first, I want to let Scoop Nation know that we have Spider-Man 2 in our possession. I've downloaded it. I'm going to fire it up tonight. We will not be able to talk about it for a little bit. Sony very graciously gave us the game very early, and the review embargo is up Monday, October 16th at 7 a.m. Pacific. So we won't be diving into it until then, but just want to let you know that Spider-Man is in good hands, and our web swinging adventure will begin.
What do you think of the download code? Was it good letters and numbers?
It was all good letters and numbers. Shout out, I appreciate, I've also entered some Xbox redemption codes lately, and they're still way too long. They're so long. I appreciate how Sony's is just 12 characters. That's it.
Scoop.
I think about that all the time. It's like the Xbox ones are 16 and the Sony ones are 12. And then I get a little bit, I'm like, is Sony going to run out of codes? Like, what's the math on like how many possible, like, oh no, they can make 16 billion codes. It's fine.
It's been since the PS3 era. Right. Surely they've been like, something they use, then they can reuse now.
Recycle.
They can reuse.
What are? It's like the odds are like 0.001 to guess it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna ask the same thing. Like, has anybody ever forced a code to work? But here's the kicker, and I know the audience loves code chat. This is how we start every episode.
Code scoop
is that Nintendo's codes start with the same letters and numbers that are like unmemorizable, but you still have to type them in each time. And it's like, you guys don't need to do that. You can just start your code later after those numbers you've already agreed upon.
Maybe they don't know.
Nintendo also gives you some help, because when you get like halfway through entering it, it grays out any characters that aren't going to be used. It's like, why are you giving me help with guessing this code?
Yeah. It grays out like they don't use O, they use zero. And like, I was like, that's pretty smart. That's pretty smart. Yeah.
You asking about people, I have a quick anecdote, Damon, I promise.
Okay.
It's fast.
Code chat.
Code chat. People guessing codes reminded me, in a lot of eighth grades in the United States, you take a field trip to Washington, D.C., you fly there. And so my whole class flew to Washington, D.C. And in that era, there were phones in the back of the seat in front of you. And you could pull the phone out and like it had a thing. So like then you could like punch in a credit card number and like make a phone call. And I just did that. I punched in a bunch of random numbers and I called my school.
Called the school.
I didn't know who else. I didn't expect to get this far. I don't know. I don't know what to do now. And then I got to talk to some of my teachers and that was that. And someone probably got – so one of two things happened. One, either the plane just took it on honor system. That like, you know, sure, this code must be valid. We'll charge them when the plane lands. Or, you know, someone got a bill for like $200 or some airline phone call they didn't make.
I remember those phone cradles on planes did have games. Now, I never played them because they are expensive, but there was like some kind of LCD black and white Palm Pilot like screen with like those phones. If I'm like reaching deep into my memory, I wonder what they were. Tetris.
You know, Justin, that is exactly how Bart Simpson got a boot to the butt.
Mm-hmm.
So you're lucky you got away.
That is right.
I forgot about that.
Because we love our anagrams here, I want to let everyone know Code Scoop anagrams to co-scooped. Although the one that I really like is Coco's dope.
Mm.
Coco's dope.
Coco's dope. You know, I am the same age that Homer Simpson is in The Simpsons, and it makes me wonder how many former Bart Simpsons have grown up to be Homers.
Interesting. I didn't know Homer had an age.
Yeah, he's 39.
And it's super confusing because has now grown up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and maybe 90s now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a 90s episode. He's in a grunge band.
Come on.
Well,
is that real?
Mm-hmm,
that is real. It's a good one.
But they all went to Lollapalooza together in the 90s. We saw it.
All right. Well, with Spider-Man 2 in hand, I'll start playing that tonight, which means I don't know what that means for Baldur's Gate 3, because I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3 nonstop, and I love it. But, I mean, I'm going to – when you switch gears, coming back to a game like Baldur's Gate 3 might be tough. Let's see. I know Justin has put a lot of time into Baldur's Gate 3. Matt?
Yeah, I've also put it down because I played a bunch of Phantom Liberty.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So. Justin, you said you wanted like, I don't think you've really gotten to say your piece on Baldur's Gate 3 yet.
Oh, on this show. I think it's so good. I'm not even sure where to start. I guess like Damon, where are you in the, are you still in Act 1?
I'm still in Act 1. So I went through the Goblin Camp, that whole thing, which I wanted to say mm-hmm. that that's just like one of the coolest sequences I've done in games in a long time.
Yeah.
So I went through all that. You rescue Halsim, go back to the Druid Grove, and like now he wants to like team up with me and we have to go to the moon tower or something. And he says there's two ways, a hard way through the mountain or you can go through the Underdark. So I'm going to go through the Underdark. But that's where I am right now.
So you only played the tutorial?
No, but the thing is, Act 1 in that game is, and I'm not exaggerating, is like 40 plus hours long.
And I'm at like 25 hours. So yeah.
Yeah. So actually, pro tip, Damon, you can do both paths. So you can go through the mountain pass and do it. There's a bunch of story stuff there and get to the point of no return and then leave and then still go into the Underdark and do all of that. So I would highly recommend it.
Okay.
I know, Damon, you're giving me a chance to say my piece, but I love Baldur's Gate 3 so much that it's like, I feel like I need to like compose notes and like share. But like, Damon, the thing about that Goblin Camp is there are dozens of different ways to approach it. Not just from a role-playing standpoint of like, you can ally yourself with the goblins and say, F the good guys, I'm just going to do an evil run through. You can pretend to be on their side and then betray them. You can fight them all. You can poison their grog, or maybe it's their stew or whatever it is, and like take them out that way. Like, just the reactivity of the game world is like, it's not the only game to ever do this, but it's been a while since I played a game that like, if you have an idea, the game just says, yes, you can do that. Like there was a stuck gear. I had to turn something and had to do a strength check. And it was stuck, and like I couldn't do it, and I threw a bottle of grease on it, and then it made the skill check easier.
Cool. That's good.
And just like stuff like that in the game world, it just, you know, characters have specific dialogue if they die. There's like, if a character dies, there's an in-game way to bring them back and resurrect them, and then they comment on what just happened, like, I just died. And like, it's like so interesting and well done, and the game's willingness to like two characters in your party hate each other, and there's a cutscene where like they're going to kill each other. Like one's going to kill the other. Yep. And you can just let that happen. You can just do that. And then you just don't have that party member for the rest of the game. And some people see that as a criticism, as like, like there's a golden path. Like one path is more valid than another, more fleshed out than another. But I'm like, no, like if you let that character die, like your consequences, like their storyline is just done. Right. Yeah. Like, I think that's really, really interesting and cool. And, I don't know. It's just even on like a moment to moment basis, like I think the voice acting is like best of breed, probably the best in any role playing game yep. ever. Like yep. it really shows that all the cutscenes are motion captured. Like Damon, you played Starfield. You did it in the opposite order of me. Mm-hmm. You did Starfield and Baldur's Gate. But like it's such a night and day difference, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's also got some of the best writing mm-hmm. ever in a game.
Hands sure. down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like yeah. I said last week, that I'm going through the game with a fine tooth comb. I'm doing everything in the game. But as I'm watching YouTube videos and reading videos about like things you didn't see and things you missed, it's like, I missed all of that stuff. And like, and I tried so hard to like click on everything and talk to everyone. And there's like whole characters that somehow I just never met. So it's unbelievable how much more I liked it than I thought I would. And it's really like, it also has that intangible quality of like, you know, I put it down 2 or 3 weeks ago and like, it stuck with me. I still think about it all the time. And you know, I've played great games that don't do that. They feel more like they're in the past and you're like, okay, that was fun. And you move on yeah. with your life. But like this one gets under your skin in a really positive way.
Yeah. It's so good. Sam, in the Goblin Camp, when you arrive there, they're not hostile towards you. They're not like super friendly, but they'll let you just sort of meander about their camp. And there's several things you need to do there. You need to rescue some people that are being held captive, and then eventually you need to take out the 3 goblin leaders. Those are like the main quests. And like that's where I realized one of your characters, well, one of your characters in their party, his name is Asterion, I think is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
He's
mm-hmm.
really good at stealth. And so that's where I realized the best way to play the game for me was just to like let him go on his own, like leave the other 3 somewhere. And then eventually the goblins will turn on you because you do too many bad things to anger them. And there's all these rooms that goblins are just waiting in. And when you're in stealth, you can see their line of sight. You can see where you're going to be found out. So I would just take Asterion to that room and get in a safe place and then use my bow and arrow on an enemy. And there's a 90% chance I'll take them out with one hit. And everyone, all the other goblins will be alerted, but I'm still hidden. So I just have to wait the few seconds that they're searching for me. And then when they'll just go back to their posts. And then one by one, I just went through every room in the whole goblin camp, taking out all the goblins that way. It was great.
You cleaned them all out?
Yeah, it took like 2 hours. I loved it.
That's genocide.
Yeah. Yeah. I can live with it. It's really, really good.
You know, it's funny that you bring up the ability to kind of skip quests or fail quests or just really affect the game, because I think that's what people are really loving about Phantom Liberty. And when I played through some of these parts, and what I'm sure what Matt did, because he played so much earlier than even me, you know, I didn't realize that you could, we've written about this now and done videos on it, but you can completely skip Phantom Liberty by just being a jerk. I wrote that headline yesterday. It's completely true. You can just, if you just say like, I don't want to have anything to do with this, you miss out on, you know, 10 story missions. You can also do it by not being fast in this other mission.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm so excited to start it. I love Cyberpunk so much. Damon, something you can try is, you know, characters in Baldur's Gate, just like every game, have barks when you click on them or when they enter stealth or exit stealth or when they attack. And like there's a barbarian named Karlak who, if you put her into stealth mode, she just has hilarious character barks. And like, it's so well done. She's like, this is for someone teeny teeny, not for someone biggie biggie. Like just weird, weird, funny stuff. And like, they're all like that. Like Gale, the mage, has really yeah. funny barks. If you try to put him into stealth mode too, he's like, I'm not the right person for this. Like, it's just, it's really cute. And Damon, the game just goes from strength to strength. Like it yeah. just gets better as it goes. And it all scaffolds up into a way that's just unbelievable.
It really feels like an adventure. Like I'm traveling around with my party going on adventures. I was in a big battle in the goblin camp. And then one Shadow Heart gets like knocked into the spider pit. Yeah. And you can't get out. So now she's just like on her own. Has to go off on her own and figure out a way to like get back to the party on her own. And then I figure out this later. I don't have this ability. But some characters have the ability to talk to the spiders. And you can convince yeah. the spiders to join you and attack the goblins. It's pretty good.
Yeah. You definitely need to get a character that has talk to animals. There's speak yeah. with the dead, too. You can speak with most yeah. dead bodies you find. And they have extra dialogue.
Cool.
Talk to animals is great.
You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop.
Well, speaking of Baldur's Gate 3, that's the topic of our first email here. So first of all, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, well, remember, howdy. You can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Gavin from Texas did. Says, what's up, Scoop crew? First time, long time, and I'm obsessed with Baldur's Gate 3. I told my friend that it's easily, in my opinion, the best RPG of all time. However, he disagrees, stating that it's too new to be the best. I feel that he's wrong in this case, but it did lead me to wonder, when talking about all-time greats, how much weight should a game's age and cultural significance hold in a debate? I would love to hear your opinions. Justin, I believe you said you think it's the best RPG ever.
I sympathize with the GameScoop listener's friend of I think it's in the running. I think that if, like, look, like, gun to my head, is this the best RPG ever? Like, yeah, maybe it is. But there's nothing wrong with waiting. Like, let's see how we feel in a year, right? Yeah. Like, that's a big decision. And sometimes you need to sit with stuff for a while.
Yeah. I tend to think, recency bias is a real thing. But there have been people within IGN, too, that have said Tears of the Kingdom is the greatest game ever made. Oh, we're only, like, 5 or 6 months since that game has been released. Personally, I think it's a little too soon to say things like that. I don't know. Sam, where do you come down on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth giving it some space. I mean, Final Fantasy I will continue to be the best RPG ever made. there's no way to top it. It can't be done. But I think it's interesting thinking of it as a genre thing specifically, though, because, it's very difficult to compare the history of RPGs to each other now because they're so crazy different and everything. But if you were, I think it's more likely you could say, like, is Baldur's Gate 3 the best RPG of, this and last generation or something? It's like probably pretty easy to answer that, Yeah. Then you can start thinking about you don't have to compare it to Final Fantasy VI, but you can compare it to Mass Effect 2. Is it better than Mass Effect 2? You can probably answer that question, right?
Mass Effect 2 is pretty good.
Mass Effect 2 is very good.
But Baldur's Gate 3?
the stuff, like, it focuses in over time. It's like, is Baldur's Gate 3 one of the greatest RPGs ever made? Unquestionably, right? Yeah. And then it can, like, rise in your esteem the further away you get from it as the dust settles.
Yeah, and I don't think Baldur's Gate or Tears of the Kingdom are as susceptible to recency bias as some of the other games I've encountered. But just to explain what that is, like, when you're seeing that, like, on a staff that has to judge games of the year, like, everybody has to talk about that because it's so real. It's crazy how much people can swoon over a game that came out and then be like, I don't even remember playing Resident Evil 4 Remake, just happens. Like, it's just completely fine. But what's important is that critics are aware of that, especially, editors that are looking over stuff and keeping a check on it. It's just part of the conversation. And I love how our brains do that.
Matt, have you ever played a game or seen a movie and you're immediately like, well, this is the best of this that has ever been made?
Yeah, actually, I have a pretty real example is when I played Resident Evil 2 Remake. You know, I love Resident Evil games. I played all the old ones. And I played 2 Remake, and immediately I'm like, this is the best Resident Evil game of all time.
That's fair.
And 4 years afterwards, I still stand by it. I think Resident Evil 2 Remake is the best Resident Evil game of all time. And it's one of those things where I feel like recency bias is real, but like when it comes to like all times lists, you shouldn't really get too wedded to like something just because it did it first. You know, like people talk about Citizen Kane because like, oh, it's the greatest movie of all time. And like, why? It's like, oh, because it did all these things first. I'm like, sure, but like, it's not. I mean, you know, there are better movies than Citizen Kane now, you know?
You end up with like the on all time lists. I think, Matt, you're hitting on something important, which is you can almost have the opposite of recency bias where it becomes like scary or hard for anything to break into and like, you know, like Tetris is like the greatest video game ever made. And it's like, well, what are you going to put above that? Like, it becomes hard to like dethrone something.
I also like the opposite of this, where each Wes Anderson movie I see is the worst Wes Anderson movie I've ever seen.
Oh, I like Asteroid City. I just watched it.
Yeah, that did break the spell because it was not worse than French Dispatch. I will tell you that. And I like Wes Anderson. I'm just saying his movies are getting more Wes Anderson-y, and that might not necessarily be a good thing. There's a short he released this week that I haven't seen yet.
Oh, I missed it.
Another Roald Dahl. It's not even that short. It's like 45 minutes long.
What? That's a long
one. Yes. Really? It's on Netflix. It's it's a new...
The Wonderful Adventures of... It's got Benedict Cumberbatch in it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of Netflix...
They're such a weird company.
I know. There's a new Castlevania series out, and it's supposed to be great.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited to watch that.
There's a Tomb Raider anime they announced, too. Did you see that?
And the Devil May Cry anime.
Yeah. I'm a little bit less excited for those. Oh. But I like that first Castlevania series. It was great. That's what you should watch on your plane there, Sam.
Ow.
What,
it's going to be all in Italian. Yeah.
What are you talking about? I'll just download it on Netflix.
Oh, I didn't even know you could do that on Netflix.
Yeah. It is a little, it might be a little violent for an airplane. You'll have to
How much can you download on your phone?
Justin, I once watched all of Kill la Kill on an airplane.
No.
It's a little bit
it's
like,
fine.
I'm trying to look at my screen. Sam, Resident Evil 2 Remake or Resident Evil 4 Remake? Which one is the best Resident Evil?
Oh, I mean, 4 is better than 2. Mm-hmm. It always has been. But 2 is amazing.
They're both good.
Ridiculous.
Luckily, I'm the host.
Really? You think 4 is not even close to 2?
I like 4 a lot. I think 4 is a very good top 5 Resident Evil game. I just think 2 Remake is better. And, like, I think 4 original is better than 2 original.
You might have missed this, but they remade 4.
I know they remade 4. I think 4 original is better than 2 original. I think 2 remake is better than 4 remake.
Hmm.
Okay. Well,
there's no way to know who's right.
2 remake, I will give 2 tofu. That is an amazing playthrough.
Well, speaking of Resident Evil 4, our next email comes from Big Tony Style.
He
says, I just returned from a week-long camping trip and was catching up on all the gaming news while I was gone. I saw a lot of buzz and praise going around for the Resident Evil 4 DLC and the new Cyberpunk expansion. I'm intrigued by both, but I rarely jump back into games I've previously beaten. With Little Tony Style on the scene, the likelihood of revisiting a game for DLC is increasingly less likely. I'm curious what a game's downloadable content needs to do or have in order to pull you back in, and what is some of your favorite DLC ever? I admit it can be hard for DLC to pull me back in because I'm just the type where I finish a game and I'm just on to the next, and then usually like right now this Resident Evil 4 DLC is supposed to be great, but I'm playing other things right now, so it's like there's new games coming out, so it's hard for me to jump into that. Cyberpunk is different because it's been so long since I've played that, and it's 2.0. I'm just like starting it. A whole new game of Cyberpunk at that point.
Which we should clarify, like, they're two separate things. 2.0 is independent of Phantom Liberty. 2.0
right.
is a big gameplay overhaul. Phantom Liberty adds a whole new storyline.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. I might as well just start
and
just start fresh there.
Justin, for me, it has to be made by Nintendo. Oh, you want to go to Justin?
The DLC has to be made by Nintendo. So you're not going to play the RE4
DLC?
My
role. I'm just saying that's the rule. Like, I will play it if it's made by Nintendo. If it's not made by Nintendo, then, like, it's a crapshoot. I would actually have to add in if it's made by CD Projekt Red, too, because I've played all their DLC, but they've only had two games in my lifetime that I've played or cared about.
Which are three and seven.
CD Projekt is really clever and just thoughtful with how they do their DLC. Of like, they usually give you a character build to jump right to it. Like, hey, just go do the new stuff. Or start a new game and just jump right into the new stuff, or they integrate it into the main game. I think that's the right approach to take. You know, like, there's certain, and granted, this is like Dark Souls' whole thing is like, you know, it doesn't tell you anything, figure it out. But like, yeah, sometimes you have to read a guide on how to even start and find the DLC in a game, which is cool. Like, there's this cool hidden thing that like isn't that easy to get to, but that's not for me. I'm the same as you, Damon. Like, I'm hard pressed to think about that many story DLCs I've ever played. Actually, I don't do them. Like, I'm on to the next game.
Yeah, I'm like that too. Although Undead Nightmare is the one that stands out to me as being that's maybe my favorite one ever. I know there's like, I didn't even play like the BioShock stuff.
Yeah. And what's the one, BioShock 2 had a DLC that everybody is really into.
Minerva's Den.
That people keep saying is one of the best DLCs of all time.
Yeah. And Infinite had good stuff too, but I'm just always on to the next. That's why I don't do New Game Plus either. It's like, I've finished this game.
I mean, Bethesda does huge story expansions that weave in perfectly to their games.
I did play those. I did play the Skyrim ones, the Dawnstar expansion, and then the other
Fallout.
One. Yeah. Yeah, they do, like, there's this cadence of, like, the game comes out, like, Bethesda is a good example of this, actually. Game comes out, one or two story packs, and then, like, the Game of the Year edition, or if the game didn't win Game of the Year, like, the Everything edition. And that's good. That's, like, a good way to do it. Like, I guess you could argue it kind of punishes, like, early adopters a little bit, but it's a nice kind of, like, second wind that that a story game gets. And then usually the feeling is, like, well, our game is, like, content complete now. Like, it's finished. And now if you are waiting, like, now you can kind of experience it all in one. And that always feels good.
What cracks me up is, like, I got through, I don't know, 50 hours of Assassin's Creed Valhalla. And I'm like, by the time they're announcing these like giant DLCs and they were coming out, I'm like, I can't even play the 120 hours that is the main game here. Like, I just don't have it in me.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely don't need those.
I did play the Assassin's Creed Odyssey DLCs, and they were crazy. They went in, like, the absolute most crazy directions.
Well, that has, like, fantastic creatures and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's, I think I like it when they do that, like Undead Nightmare, like really like shake things up with this DLC. Don't just give me like a little bit more of what I already played.
Right. For me, it's gotta have new areas. Like, if they add a new part of the map or a new area, and like From Software does all this with Dark Souls, like Dark Souls and Bloodborne, and upcoming, presumably with Elden Ring when that DLC comes up, there's always like a new area and there's always gonna be a bunch of new bosses, and it's sort of like, I'm like, all right, I'm going back.
Yeah.
I mean, Elden Ring, by the time that DLC comes out, that game's going to be 2 years old. That's weird. Yeah. Is that a record?
Maybe they changed plans. I don't know.
3 years since Cyberpunk.
Maybe they'll come out and say,
that's true.
We're not doing Elden Ring DLC. Instead, we're doing Elden Ring 2.
Oh, man.
People will be okay with that. Yeah.
But one reason I'm squeamish to get back into games that, you know, have been that long is that, and this just happened with Cyberpunk, is it is really, it's not like riding a bike. It's really difficult to figure out what the hell your character, like, why did I have this stuff equipped, let alone the systems. But Cyberpunk, I just skipped all that, and I'm so grateful for them to let me roll a character and start Phantom Liberty, and I don't feel like I lost anything. It just doesn't matter. Like, I'm just like, I'm starting to build a character, and I should just compare them at the end and see how similar they are, because I love my character I'm building. It's like super cool, and it's just like, what, maybe this is exactly what I'm for before, but it's like hacker heavy, stealth heavy. Like, I love it. Like, I'm having so much fun building this character.
Yeah, that's like, Sam, what you're describing is every person that plays an MMO when they log back into that MMO after having not played it in years, and your bags are just filled with junk, and you're like, I don't know what any of this is. Like, what is all this stuff, and like, where am I? And like, you have like, and like, like, at least the way I play MMOs is like, I'm very, very immersed in them. And so I have like a million things in my quest log. And I'm just like, I don't care about any of this anymore. Get all this out of here. I like delete all the stuff from my bags or dump it. I'm usually too cowardly to delete it. So I dump it in the bank. I'm like, maybe I'll need this someday.
Yeah, maybe.
I edited a big piece that we did in written and video form that was just like how to get back into Cyberpunk. And I'm really proud of it because it just tells me like, how do you fast travel? Because it's like, it's different than any other game. Like, you're not just going to turn on the game and know where your apartment is either. Like, it's like, there's very basic things that if you, you know, skip, that it's like the game doesn't tell you anything about it. And the system's changed. So it's like, you know, this warped version of it. It was really fun to work on that. And I can't wait to do more of those.
Actually, it's really funny. I did forget where the apartment is in Cyberpunk 2077.
I know. And like, it's not on your map.
I didn't touch for years. And you get, and like at some point, I think in like 2022 or 2021, they gave every player like free Witcher 3 cosmetics that you can pick up in your apartment. And I wanted it. And then I booted up. Yeah, and I booted up Phantom Liberty. And I was like, I do not know where the apartment is. I had to Google it. I was like, where is the apartment in Cyberpunk?
It's in the mega building in, what's it called?
Block 10, towns. Building 10. Yeah, something like that.
You can buy more apartments too. You gotta get the fancy one.
Yeah, one of the things with the new DLC is like you get a new apartment in Dogtown. It's like Dogtown's like 100% a bombed out like crater, and so your apartment's like this fallout bullshit. You know, it's like everything. It's like you have a mattress in the corner. It's so gross.
It's awful.
But yeah, you go there and look in the mirror and change your appearance.
I'm glad that Cyberpunk got a happy ending in the end. Remember 3 years ago?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I mean, of the game release.
I don't know if the ending's happy if
Cyberpunk. Well, yeah, but I mean, not the in-game story, but the story of the video game Cyberpunk got a happy ending.
Mm-hmm. It's add an ending. They did add an ending to the game, a new, improved ending.
Although I didn't really, the original ending didn't bother me, but it was a big downer, at least the way Miami ended up.
The Nomad ending is really good, but I cheated the system. Like, you know, I didn't care about those characters and that storyline at all, but I read online that like that was sort of the optimal ending, so I metagamed it. I wonder if like Night City is such a iconic, like they've created one of the greatest video game locations of all time, and like it's tied into the Cyberpunk tabletop role-playing game. And like, it makes me wonder if for any future Cyberpunk games, it's like the Herculean effort that would be required to make a new place from scratch that was like that feels impossible. But then also, it's like it's a little bit disappointing if they reuse Night City again. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know. Like, it's a tough call.
I mean, they could just go deeper in, right? Like, redo Night City, but make it so you could actually enter every building. As opposed to just some of them, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, they could also just sort of, like, think about what they're doing with Spider-Man 2.
Right.
Same city, but they're adding new boroughs.
You know. It'll be so nice because we'll all be retired and we'll have time to play Cyberpunk 2. Our convalescence.
I think about that a lot. Thinking about just playing video games in my old age. what I'll be doing in my old age is just what I'm doing now, largely for the most part. Let's move on to our next topic. This is Random Black, and they say, yes, that is my real name. Random Black. Long time, first time. Nice. With the rapid growth of AI technology, we've already seen AI-generated art in every medium, from visual art to music and video. I feel like it's only a matter of time before we see a AAA video game made from the ground up with AI. Graphics, voices, story, everything. I'm curious as to the Scoop Crew's opinion on this. I agree that it is only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Maybe not... You know, not this year, not next year, a fully realized AAA video game, AI generated. Yeah, maybe in 10, 15 years, that I think that's entirely possible.
The whole promise of robots and AI was that they would become all the janitors and burger flippers and take over all the BS jobs. And then humans would be freed up to just create art and, you know, and write things and, you know, and the humanities, like it would be the big rise of that in our culture. And instead, you know, the minimum wage has stayed the same for 20 years and income inequality is worse than ever. And now AI is making our art instead. So somewhere, something, we went sideways. I'm not quite sure. the way the question is phrased, it's like, would I play the game? Like, yeah, I'd play it as a cultural curiosity. And like, you know, but that's not what, like, that's abhorrent to me in terms of like the direction of art overall.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm in the same way that I won't watch movies from certain directors just because I don't like them. You know, like if I find out that AI suddenly makes a bunch of games and books and stuff like that, I'll just avoid them for the same reason. It's just like, you know, it's just not for me. I would rather spend my limited time on this planet playing things from, you know, people that I know and people that I admire and like.
That's a question that I was Grassmith, like, is the human authorship part of it? Is that part of what's important and cool about, I guess, all art? Like, I haven't ever thought about that before. I'm thinking about that now, and so I guess so. Although, like, imagine just some, like, pleasant instrumental electronic music. Just imagine what that sounds like to you. If you were listening to it, you're like, this is nice. If you found out, well, this was generated by AI, would that bother you?
I guess so. I guess it's a matter of, like, would I be looking forward to it? You know, like, if I find out that, oh my God, I don't even listen to a lot of music anymore, right? But if I found out, like, Nine Inch Nails is, like, 20 years down the line, it's like, we're coming back, we've revived Trent Reznor from the dead, and we have a new album.
20 years?
Yeah.
I think he's got more than 20 years left.
He's living hard.
Not anymore. He's a family man. He's got kids.
Slow down. All right, well, 40 years.
He's retired. He's playing video games.
And never mind. Yeah. 50 years. I don't know. 60 years. We'll see. Point is, I wouldn't be looking forward to, like, the next big game from AI in the same way that it would be if it was, like, the next big album from person.
Sure. You know? That's fair. Sam. An AI-generated video game, I think I know what your answer will be.
Well, I already don't like games that are not made by game developers.
For example?
Like Mario Maker levels or Roblox, for example. But a lot of people do. And I think Roblox is showing you what's going to happen here. Like, it's just a bunch of idiots making things that kids play. Like, it's going to happen, and it's going to make somebody a whole lot of money. And it's going to be really corpo BS, and it's going to feel bad. And then there'll be artists that make AI games that are, like, super interesting because they're like, hey, this, like, I twisted this computer to do this, you know, cool thing. Like, that's kind of neat, right? Those are, like, the polar ends. And then, you know, we'll all be replaced by, you know, machines eventually. So, you know, we got some time to see everything play out. But what I, you know, like, I want to know that somebody curated and crafted something to have some other motive other than me playing more of it. So, like, social media's algorithms are crafted to have me be on it more. It's not to have it be a better story or, like, be the best it can be or show me my best friend's best moments. It's not for that. And so, like, an AI generated game is going to be, like, by definition, made for a purpose other than somebody being like, I think this art should express what I feel about the world or what you should know about something that you don't know about. And, like, you know, like, it's just like AI right now is just language models. It's not a brain. If AI is a brain, then it's just an identity that can create something. And I want to know what it wants to tell me. But, like, until then, we're just talking about something that's just trying to get you to do more of it. Like, I don't know. Like, there's just nothing. There's nothing appealing about that. That's hard. That's a hard concept to get across, but I hope I got it.
No, I think you make a really good point. I just think, like AAA aside, I think the first, like, all AI generated video game that, like, resonates and has any sort of cultural impact will be smaller in scope. Just imagine, like, an indie roguelike, something like that, and it will be like a surprise. It'll be like someone will release it, and it'll be like this big indie hit, and then a couple weeks down the line or whatever, it's revealed, aha,
right,
this was an AI-generated game. Happen.
Do we know?
I think it'll be more like Roblox are going to make a bunch of AI-generated games and make a bunch of money first. I think that would be the most likely scenario.
And that would be the success story. Yeah. Like, do we even know if, like, AI could even make, like, a sequel to a thing that it makes, right? Like, AI number 47, right, for example, makes a thing and people, like it, right? But then, like, and all AI is doing is you're plugging in inputs into it and it forms this thing. And you're like, okay, well, time to make a sequel. And then you just input the same thing but add, like, better at the end of it. Would it not just, like, show you the same game? Like, it'll never be...
Right.
There'll never be,
like,
a second...
Like, how can it...
Yeah.
It can do it again. It can do a different version of it. But, like, it's not... AI is not creative. And when an AI chatbot spits out words, it doesn't know whether the words that it's saying are right or not or true or not. And so, you know, like, you could say, hey, do this again, but change this part of it and improve that part of it. And, you know, maybe it could spit out.
I've done that with them. Can you add a cake into the story? Like, you'd totally do that.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a huge counterpoint to this. So has anybody here read Ender's Game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't.
There's a video game in Ender's Game that these aliens are communicating to the main character Ender through. Basically, he goes into his pad and he plays a game. And it's about killing this giant. And one day he, like, crawls inside the giant's eye and then goes through the back of the giant's head. And there's a whole castle behind it and stuff. We're talking about, like, an adventure game that, like, all the kids are playing, but it has some kind of generation to it, you know, and they think it's by an AI. I don't think anybody questions it, but it turns out it's by this alien species that's trying to tell him something, kind of like what I was just saying, like it's trying to communicate to him through this game. However, I think the AI version of that game is incredibly interesting, because when you talk about an AI generated game that way, it's personalized. And that means that a game developer, which I would love to make me a game that I can relate to and have some connection to humanity at large. That's interesting. Well, what about if you're playing a game and things that matter only to you show up in that game, and how creepy that would be, or amazing, based on it scraping your stuff that's all available. Like, I mean, the fact that you had a Facebook account means that you don't own a bunch of those things. Like, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like, you're already past the point of privacy there, right? So it's like it's possible that an AI generated game could be so far removed from what a creator could make, because it could be personalized. And then just take that back. What could happen next year with that? Well, you could be playing a game where a character is actually pretty interesting to talk to and never repeats dialogue and has its own, you know, set of dialogue that's being generated for you. Now take that like to the nth level, right? Like, it's your open-ended, unending roguelike that, you know, that's an AI future, which is like interesting and made by an auteur still, but the experience is going to be not like something that nobody could ever do for you, unless it's a giant spider queen in space.
It's such a depressing thought that, like, you know, this space age future technology will just be used to make, you know, more authentic, you know, Harry Potter fanfic self inserts, like,
totally.
You know, like that's not like, and that's what these, and I know this isn't what you meant by this, Sam, but like a lot of
that's the corpo answer, right?
But like a lot of these AI bros are like, you know, imagine if you could be in the story, and it's like that's the beginning and end of their creativity, and their you know,
that's the definition of the metaverse.
Yeah, and so, you know, I don't know, it bums me out. Like I want art to be able to surprise me, and you know, it's a way to sort of, this is such a pretentious answer, but like, you know, you're getting insight into the creator and you know, and sort of their frame of mind when they made it, and I don't know. It bums me out.
No, you're right. Like, I think there's this thing where there's like a level, there's something that people want. It's like, I want to see a cool thing, and I want to feel good about it all the time, 100% all the time. And then they're taking away the mess of like playing something or engaging with something that was made by another person, where sometimes it's like, you made this creative decision. I didn't like it. It made me feel bad that you killed this character or did this a certain way, and that's good, you know. But like, but like sometimes I think there are some people who would rather like, no, I want all my favorite characters to be alive, and I want only like me to feel good about this thing that I'm playing 100% of the time. I mean,
it's already, I mean, roguelikes aside, which are designed to be random. So Damon, I think you're right. Like when AI manifests itself in sort of like a finished product that had very little human hands in it, it's probably going to be something like that, like randomized, you know, a really, really advanced
or procedurally generated
randomizer. Sure. But like in a game like Starfield or Skyrim, the radiant quests and the non-handcrafted, non-hand-curated content is already the worst part of those video games.
Yeah.
And so I don't, like, maybe there's an argument that like better AI tools, like generative, you know, like characters will never run out of things to say. Like maybe it can fix the parts of those games that don't feel
That's
good right now.
Say.
But like,
yep.
But I run away from anytime I'm in a video game and I'm like, I feel like I'm on the treadmill now, and I feel like I'm not in like handcrafted content. I run back the other direction. I'm like, I want to get back on the critical path at that point. Like,
yeah. I wonder if before we get, you know, fully realized AI generated games, we'll get like AI modified games. Because I was thinking the other day with like deepfake technology, which can be creepy so often, I think we'll see. Maybe, I don't know if clever is the right word, but other applications for it. For example, this occurred to me the other day. Die Hard. Mm. The movie Die Hard. That script was famously kicking around Hollywood for decades. And at one point, Frank Sinatra was attached as the lead role. I think one day we're going to be like AI, just like, let's just put Frank Sinatra into Die Hard. I want to watch Die Hard starring Frank Sinatra. And I think the deepfake is going to be able to work, be convincing enough that we'll just be able to watch a movie that way.
Oh,
like,
totally.
Swap out actors for whoever we want.
There's a YouTube channel that does that. You know, there's all these like casting rumors, like, oh, Tom Cruise was almost in Iron Man, stuff like that. There's a YouTube channel that put Tom Cruise into Iron Man using deepfake technology. And like, it's like a cool curiosity kind of thing, you know? It's like, what would have happened if this actor was cast instead of Robert Downey Jr., for example, right?
Yeah.
But it'll never be like the whole movie, you know?
Never?
I mean, for legal reasons, it can't be because Disney will shut it down.
Well, but I mean, people do all sorts of things that are illegal.
All right, that's true. Oh.
The craven capitalistic, like, now your favorite actors never need to age or die. They'll be here forever. And it's like, dude, like, no, that's not like, I don't know. I'm lacking like the vocabulary to like make a comment on like what that says about like the human condition in 2023, but it's not good. It's not great.
Along the same lines, I had this thought the other day, even, you know, legality aside, I think one day, maybe not in our lifetime, but one day you're going to be able to tell your AI assistant, whatever their name is, let's say it's just still Siri. Siri, generate me a new feel-good Beatles song in the style of I Want to Hold Your Hand. And it's just going to go, and now you're just listening to a Beatles song you've never heard, and it's going to sound like it was recorded in the 60s.
Yep. We're very close to that, and that's really, really interesting to me as well. There's another video game that's generated by AI that's in popular culture, and that's The Matrix. Mm-hmm. And that one cracks me up because the computer, the AI, has not figured out that they made such a shitty video game that everybody wants to break out of it. It's like, if you can give people just like pleasure sensations, just make that Star Trek Next Generation game that sticks to their face and they all have orgasms all the time. Like, what are you doing? Like, why did you make a game where some people are janitors? It's so stupid. It's the stupidest computer.
I mean, I haven't watched that movie in like a decade, but isn't that like a plot point of like they made the perfect world first, right? And then humans were like, I don't know about this. So they had to make like the crappy world because like that was what our brains would accept.
I think they explained that in the second one with the architect and all that.
Because everybody was asking that question.
The ergos and the blah, 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 blah. And that's the point where like 95% of us are like, okay, Matrix. Okay, Matrix.
I want out.
Well, at the very least, it's all very interesting food for thought. This is just me. Personally, I am of the mind that, like, if a lot of this makes you uncomfortable, it's kind of like, well, a lot of this is going to happen anyway. So you got to kind of figure out.
100%.
Got to kind of.
I mean, I'm glad that we solved it.
Yeah. Well, we did solve it. That's what we do at GameScoop.
Mm-hmm. And one day maybe AI will be making the best game podcast and it'll be the second one ever.
The second video game podcast. That brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from an anonymous listener and viewer, and they will explain why. They say, hey, after listening to the last episode, hearing you collectively ponder about Apple usage at Microsoft, we were wondering if people within Microsoft are allowed to use Apple
computers. Oh, yeah.
They say, I wanted to share some info from my limited perspective. I used to work at one of Microsoft's in-house advertising teams. We had several employees who used Apple products, and I remember they had to put stickers on the back of their computers to cover the logo. The logo still lit up, and everyone knew what it was under that sticker, but there was at least a small attempt to maintain appearances. There we go.
What was the sticker? A Windows logo?
I think they probably had their Nicely Job stickers that they just put on there. And with that, let the questioning begin.
Did this game come out in the 70s, 80s, or 90s?
No.
Can you play this game on a Macintosh?
I mean, you can.
It's a emulatable.
Yeah, is that what that means?
Or I guess it's out on PC and is one of the few games that work. I don't know. Is this game multi-platform?
Nope.
Oh, never mind then.
Was this published? Do we know if it's console exclusive? I'm blanking.
That's what Matt just asked.
I said it's not multi-platform.
Multi-platform. Okay, yeah, that's why. Okay, so, but that doesn't mean it's a console exclusive because it could be I guess it could be like a PC game, right? I mean, I guess I just want to know if it's a console. I'm trying to determine if it's a Nintendo, Sony, or Xbox is what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah, I think we know it's a console exclusive. Matt just asked it in the reverse way.
No, I'm just saying, like, I need to know if it's Sony, Microsoft, or Nintendo. So is it one of those?
On PC.
Yeah, or that's what I'm trying PC. To ascertain here.
Or maybe not. I don't know.
Well, is this from the GameCube generation?
What are the years of the GameCube generation to you?
I'm not telling you that. I'm going to ask you if it's from the GameCube.
And I cannot answer your question.
Is this from before? I don't know. When did the Wii U come out? 2006?
2007?
Nobody knows.
Seven?
Is this from before 2007?
Yes.
Ooh. Was this a PS2 exclusive?
No. That's five.
Same question, Xbox?
Nope.
Maybe it was a PC game or a handheld game.
Or handheld, yeah.
Was this a PC game?
Yes.
Wait, which one was it? We were talking at the same time. Handheld?
Handheld.
Okay.
Cool. Okay.
So it's probably DS, but we don't know for sure. Okay, was this a DS exclusive?
Yes.
Woo.
Fun. Did this game rely on the touch screen?
Yes.
Or controls?
Yes.
I think it's RubRabbits.
I think it's Pack Picks.
Yeah, Yoshi's Touch and Go.
Was this a launch window DS game?
Okay, I'm asking you a question. Did the DS launch in 2005?
No, I think I think 2003.
Before
that? Yeah.
Okay, well then, no, definitely not a launch window game. That's 10.
Could be Hotel Dusk.
I love Hotel Dusk.
Right?
Was this published by Nintendo?
Yes.
Hold on, aren't they all published by Nintendo technically if it comes out on the DS? No? Oh, never mind.
No,
you're right. They're just licensed by Nintendo.
Yeah.
Did you see that there is a Hotel Dusk spiritual successor announced?
I did,
yeah, that's crazy.
Cannot wait.
Let's see.
Published by Nintendo, that's actually a really good clue. Does this game feature Mario in any way? Any Mario Universe characters?
No.
Could still be Hotel Dusk. They published that, I think.
I don't know. Does this game feature Zelda or Star Fox characters?
No.
The Hotel Dusk connection grows stronger.
Yeah, I'm telling you guys. Honestly. Was this like a story-centric, like story-heavy game?
No.
Oh,
never mind. Hotel Dusk is
fine. All right. R.I.P. Hotel Dusk.
Could be Electroplankton, but we've had that, I think.
That's fine. That doesn't stop Damon. This
it's unstoppable.
Is the GameScoop Wiki still being maintained?
Yes.
The database? Exactly.
It's up to date.
Oh, cool. I should check it out.
Does this game have a sequel?
Not a direct sequel, no. There's like a spiritual thing. That's 15.
Interesting.
Oh, 15 already?
Yeah.
Oh, are you sure it's not overconfident?
Are you sure it's not 10?
Yeah.
Did you miss 5 there?
Mm-mm, I said 5.
That's not a question. Okay.
We're not.
Spiritual sequel.
Are we really at 15?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, stop messing around. I thought we just had this in the bag.
Producer, I don't know. I feel like we're.
Tom will correct me if I'm wrong, but.
I feel like we've got a good grip, maybe.
So okay, we do need to take stock. So it's Nintendo published. It's not very story heavy. It's not Star Fox, Zelda, or Mario. And it's on the DS.
And it has a spiritual sequel.
Yeah, but don't worry about that, James.
Yeah, all right. Well, then never mind then. Forget the sequel.
I mean,
that's crazy.
We really did just have Meteos, so it's probably not that again. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, there's like Kid Icarus and...
Yeah, but that was on the 3DS, wasn't it?
3DS, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Oh, boy.
It seems like very one-off-y from what we're talking about.
And like the Nintendo did some weird stuff. They did like Steel Diver. It was at 3DS, too.
Yeah.
But like that was more like launch window, right?
There's like the Brain Age games.
Yeah.
It's really touchy.
There's Nintendogs?
Brain Age and Nintendogs.
Nintendogs, plus cats.
Mm-hmm. Is it worth asking if this is one of those like casual mass market?
Yeah, maybe like was this targeted at audiences beyond gamers?
I think that's great.
Damon, was this targeted at audiences beyond gamers?
I think so. Just trying to check to make sure. I think, yes.
How would you check that?
Yes, it was. That's 16.
Maybe it's like the card games one. What was that? It was like 52.
Yeah. Shit.
And then there's also the novels one
on the Switch. It was a Clubhouse Games.
Clubhouse Games, yeah. and it was like a bestseller for a long time or something.
Yeah.
There's also the 100 classic books.
There was the Bible. Nintendo didn't publish that.
I don't know how to narrow this down.
Is there a reason why it wouldn't be Brain Age? Was that already a game or something?
I think it could be Brain Age.
It could be Brain Age. It could be Nintendogs. Could be Clubhouse Games. There was another Brain Age. There was a Big Brain Academy.
Oh yeah, Big Brain Academy.
Could be any of those. I don't know how to narrow it down. We're running low.
Three questions and a guess.
It could be Cooking Mama.
Yeah, I don't think they published that.
No, they didn't.
Here's some help. Producer Tom thinks that the question about the casual games may lead you down a dark path, but I don't make the rules. Oh. Nintendo marketed it that way.
I don't know. What does that mean?
I don't know. That sounds ominous. That sounds like something you hear on Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah. Like with that in mind, like it could be like a Pokemon game or something that had like crossover appeal.
Oh, I guess like one of the like spin-off Pokemon games, like Dungeon Explorer or whatever it's called.
Why couldn't it be Diamond and Pearl?
I don't know. Should we ask if it's like an RPG, an adventure game, or a...
What was that? It didn't get a sequel, but it got like a spiritual successor later that Damon said, Don't worry about that. I'm not worrying about it. But I'm just saying like that means it can't be Pokemon. What about Tetris DS?
Was there a Tetris DS?
Oh yeah, it was great. It had online play. It was awesome. It had all these weird modes.
We could ask if it's a puzzle game, an adventure game, or a...
Let's be smart about this. Let's ask if it's a
brain
puzzle,
trainer,
a puzzle game, or a dog's game.
No, it is not a puzzle game nor a dog's game.
Oh no. But Damon, sidebar, would you have counted the brain games as puzzle games?
I mean, in this context, yeah, I probably would have.
Oh God! So it's not any of them. It's not a brain game, or a dog's game,
or Nintendogs.
Damon, would it help to know if it got good scores?
That wouldn't help me.
No.
I mean, so that would still leave Clubhouse Games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess they're not puzzles.
You name dropped Electroplankton. Could be that.
I feel like we just had that one.
It's also like 2005-ish, 2004-ish or whatever.
Nintendo published Layton, but that's pretty story heavy. And it's also obviously a puzzle game.
Definitely sequels. Should we ask if it's just like part of one of Nintendo's biggest universes or a spinoff?
Well, that was already
like
Mario
a smaller thing.
And Zelda, right? Like those are.
And Star Fox. But we're missing Pokemon.
Well, but we know the game didn't get sequels.
Well, so it could just be its own thing. It could be a Pokemon spinoff that didn't get a sequel.
Could be a spinoff. Like it couldn't be Animal Crossing.
What's the Pokemon game that they did that was like with ghosts instead?
Yo-Kai Watch.
That was a level 5 joint.
That was a 3DS game.
But they might have published it.
We hear sometimes from our listeners that they're just yelling at their iPhones while they're listening to this. And that's what Tom is doing right now as he's producing this show.
Oh, no. Is it that obvious?
There was that rhythm game. It was Oinden in Japan, and then it came out in the United States as...
Elite Beat Agents.
Elite Beat Agents, yeah.
Oh, I loved Elite Beat Agents.
Right, it was really good. I just showed it to my kids like a couple months ago. There was Pinball. There was Metroid Prime Pinball.
Oh, yeah. What was it? The Metroid Hunters, the unfinished demo DS cartridge?
Did we already ask if it was a puzzle game?
Yes, it's not a puzzle.
Yeah, we did. So we could do, is this a music, pinball, or adventure game.
Do we have one question and a guess?
Two questions and a guess.
I don't know.
Music, what music, pinball, or adventure, I'd say.
Okay.
Is this a music, pinball, or adventure game?
Yes.
Oh, God. Now we have one question and a guess?
Yep.
Which do, like we do?
A,
do we do?
I think it's Elite Beat Agents now that we're talking about
it. I think it probably... I think it
is this be. A music game?
Yes.
All right. Well, it's Elite Beat. It's not Electroplankton because we just had that.
Yeah. Is it Elite Beat Agents?
It is Elite Beat Agents.
Yes.
Nice job. I love a good 20th question save. 2006.
My goodness me.
And
look how janky this looks now. Wow.
Yeah.
I know. It's too low res. Yeah. It was released under Nintendo's Touch Generations label, which marketed its games to more casual people. So
yeah, I sure. love Elite Beat Agents. Like, yeah. just mm-hmm. I wanted to say that up front. But like, I really did get this cart out and play it with my girls the other day. Not the other day, but like, you know, 3 or 4 months ago. And like, the game is incredibly hard. Like, it's not friendly. Like, it's really, like, because I was so immersed in it and played it so much, I got really good at it. And B, all the song covers are terrible.
Oh, my gosh.
And when the game came out 20 years ago, I didn't think anything about how the covers, like, you know, we just don't, like, music games have real songs now. They don't have covers. So that's my Elite Beat Agents sort of modern day look back.
Published by Nintendo, developed by Innes, which they just did sort of rhythm game stuff, and they are still today, but they have a new name. They went bankrupt in like 2016, and now they're just under a new game, making a lot of iOS stuff and mobile gaming.
Okay. There was like Japan only rhythm Elite Beat Agent games, weren't there?
Yeah, they have long Japanese Wendan titles.
Yeah. Wendan and Wendan 2, they're
right,
great.
Right.
Yes. Thank you for the suggestion, our anonymous listener. I know Sam needs to run. Sam will also be out for the next couple weeks, so. Safe travels, Sam. We will see you.
Thank you so much.
When you get back, and we'll be able to talk about Spider-Man 2 in a few weeks. But that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to Matt here in the studio with me. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Justin. And thank you to Tom working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to Season 1, we are thrilled to announce the launch of Season 2. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make Season 2 even more memorable together.